Welcome to The Science Line. I'm Scott.
And I'm Risa. We're here to learn about the science that's happening here in our Idaho community, but we're also challenging scientists who dare to come on our show to think about how they communicate their research to people who know nothing about it, but whose tax dollars are funding it, like us.
But we're not going to take it easy on our guests. They will have to pay for their communication faux pas, like using ridiculous and unrelatable science terms and jargon, and they better not bore us. Based on how well they do, we'll assign them written homework in the form of lines. Hopefully, this will remind them of their blunders and what not to do next time.
Geez, take it easy, Scott. No one's going to want to come on our show if you keep carrying on like that.
So, Risa, this week on the show, I hear we have some really special guests.
We do. And now I might be a little bit partial to these people because they are my students in my applied and environmental microbiology class, but they are doing something really awesome this semester for our community that I think we should be talking about on the Science Line.
So what is that?
Yeah, so they decided that they wanted to do a project for this class to reach out to the public and provide information about the COVID-19 vaccines.
Oh, okay. So you are giving a presentation to educate people on what the vaccine is and how it works?
That's exactly right. And as part of that, we address a lot of the common concerns that have been coming up that have made people feel very hesitant about getting the vaccine.
Oh, okay. So how long has this project been going on?
Yeah, we started this at the beginning of the semester, and we've had the opportunity so far to present to a number of different people across Idaho, and we're going to even be getting in to Utah.
So who has your presentation been for? Who have you targeted?
We've targeted a number of different people. That includes students, teachers, families with children, cooks, bus drivers.
So they've actually been going out of the classroom.
Yes.
And they've been talking. Oh, okay.
Yeah, from people from all different walks of life, which is awesome.
Oh, that is awesome.
And one of the other really cool things that I am so excited about, as well as my students, is that we have translated this presentation. Well, not me. I should not take credit for this. One of my students has translated our presentation into Spanish, and we are going to be giving our presentation to people around the country that speak Spanish.
Well, I hope you're giving them extra credit for doing all this work.
Well, they probably deserve something. But I'm really looking forward to hearing what they have to say and telling us about what their experience has been so far. All right. This week on the Science Line, we are joined by my students, Idaho State University senior microbiology students, Jacqueline Lindley, Chance Arce, and Nick Phillips. Hi, guys.
Hey, Risa.
It's nice to see you all again. Just in a slightly different capacity this time.
So, guys, this is a golden opportunity for me, and I can't let it pass me by. What is Risa like as a teacher?
She's very fun, and it's really laid back because we have only three people in the class.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. She's hands down easily my favorite teacher at ISU.
You're definitely giving extra credit.
What the heck?
Yeah, this is my favorite class.
Absolutely our favorite class. We talk about it all the time.
See, Scott was not expecting that. He is expecting, he was hoping you would say, I'm really mean. That's what he was hoping for.
I can't even picture Risa being mean. You're kidding me. You gotta be having like the worst day ever if Risa's mean.
So Risa and I are really excited to have you on the show, and we've just been talking about your science communication work with the general public. And I can't wait to hear more about what you've been doing and what you've learned throughout this process. But before we get into all that, here on the Science Line, we like to start off by finding out if you are well behaved in school. So did you ever have to write lines on the board?
No.
You never got in trouble?
No, not like that, not at all.
Oh, I'm so proud of you, Chance.
I maybe didn't have to write lines, but definitely other things. I grew up with three brothers, and so I was kind of a major tomboy when I was younger. I think I'm a lot better behaved now, but throughout grade school, maybe not so much.
Oh, that's so great. And Nick.
Well, during grade school, up until six, I kind of was kind of wild.
There you go.
Okay. Had to write lines a few times. But after that, I ended up being pretty quiet until college. So.
There you go.
Nice. Oh, that's great. So we have very, very different experiences among all three of them.
So the reason we asked that on the Science Line is because the whole idea of the show is that we are judging your ability to communicate your science. And at the end of the show, we're going to give you a number of lines based on how well you did. So if you did really well, you don't get very many lines. If you sucked, you get loads of lines.
Okay, so are you ready to get your line? Okay, we have a specific line for you guys.
And you have to remember it.
And you have to remember it. And your line is, I will not be a pain in the arm to Risa in class for the rest of the semester.
I feel like that pun is lost because right? I was really happy when I came up with that. But right. We haven't even introduced the fact that you guys are coming on to talk about vaccines.
Right.
So the pain in the arm joke is lost. Yep. So Jacqueline, Chance and Nick, usually we start off the show with the 2-minute why do we care section, which is where we ask our guests to briefly explain their research and why the general public should care about it. But today is going to be a little different because there's three of you. Risa and I have decided that instead of the 2-minute why do we care section, we're going to give you 3 minutes to briefly summarize your vaccine talk.
Okay, so each of you are going to have roughly a minute to explain what you think is one of the most important points within your presentation about the COVID-19 vaccine. Good luck.
So we have been studying how the COVID-19 vaccine works. As microbiologists, we feel like we know the most about this. And so we took it upon ourselves to teach the community about this. And so in our presentation, we talk about the goal of the COVID-19 vaccine. And the goal is to protect ourselves from the whole COVID-19 virus. And the vaccine essentially gives us a recipe to make just one spike of the COVID-19 virus. And our body uses that recipe and it makes many of these spike proteins. After we've made all of these spike proteins, our body then learns how to fight them. And after we fought these spike proteins, we now have antibodies or memory cells on how we would fight a real COVID-19 virus. So if we ever come in contact to a real COVID-19 virus, we would know how to get rid of it.
Yeah, so to go off what Jacqueline was saying, we also talk about like what exactly is in the COVID-19 vaccine. And it's actually a very simple recipe. You have that recipe, as she said, for the mRNA of the spike protein of the COVID-19 virus. And we take that and they put it with some lipids, these fats secure around the mRNA. And then along with that, there are some salts to help balance the pH of the body when they do inject it inside of you. Sugars to protect the lipids and the mRNA from degrading itself when it's actually stored at like low temperatures, because it's like, what, like negative 80 degrees Celsius that they have to keep it at, so it keeps it from falling apart. To go off that, when it comes to the two vaccines that we talk about, we mostly talk about the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, because they're really prevalent and they're readily available in Idaho. Everyone's getting vaccines or either getting one of the two. So to talk about that, there's actually only a few reactions, and that's something we talk about in our presentation. Like actually per each vaccine in the Moderna, there's only 2 allergic reactions per 1 million doses, and then in the Pfizer, it's 11 per 1 million doses. The chance of having an allergic reaction to this vaccine is super low, and then deaths attributed to the vaccine are 0. And in comparison to that, with the actual COVID-19 virus, everyone knows death rates are actually super high in America. It's got over like a 1.8% mortality rate, which is over 500,000 people have already died from the COVID-19 virus. And so in relation to that, having 0 deaths attributed to the vaccine is a lot better than the deaths attributed to the COVID-19 virus.
And I would actually like to talk about the concept of herd immunity. And herd immunity is immunity in most of the population. Given the data we have from previous vaccines, that's projected to be 70 to 85% of the population to achieve this concept of herd immunity. And so when most of the population is immunized, we protect the people who might not be able to get the vaccine. For example, people that are immunocompromised and have a history of allergic reactions, as well as children or pregnant women, they might not be able to get the vaccine. And so even if you are 20 and have a great immune system, it's really important just to think about getting the vaccine, because you can help protect and act as a shield against COVID-19 for these people who might not be able to get the vaccine.
I'm Scott Greaves, here with my co-host, Dr. Risa Ledbetter. Joining us in the studio today are 3 of Risa's microbiology students, Chance, Jacqueline, and Nick. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation. Stay tuned for questions and trivia on the Science Line.
KISU works hard to ensure the reliability of our FM signal, but occasionally, seasonal weather or equipment failures cause us to go off the air. Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
We want to pause for a moment to let you know that you're listening to The Science Line. I'm Scott Greaves, here with my co-host, Dr. Risa Ledbetter. Joining us in the studio today is three of Reese's students, Chance, Jacqueline, and Nick. So where have you guys been giving your presentation on the COVID-19 vaccination, and what sort of reaction and feedback have you had from the public so far?
So far, we have given presentations to class on campus that was a communications class. They were all fairly receptive to getting the vaccine already, but after that presentation, they were all the more likely to get it, and they had many questions about it, so that was super exciting. We've also given presentations to the Early Learning Center all across Southeast Idaho, and that feedback was also really good. We had a lot of people that were not likely to get the vaccine before those presentations now are very likely to get the vaccine after.
Kind of our plans for the future. This Saturday, I'm actually giving a presentation in Spanish for a lot of the people who might not be able to understand the presentation in English. Hopefully, the responses will be just as good as previously observed.
So, Nick, you've actually translated the presentation into Spanish for our Spanish-speaking community, correct?
Yes, I have translated the entire presentation into Spanish.
That's really exciting to be able to reach the Spanish-speaking community as well.
So, Nick, is there quite a big Spanish-speaking community here in Southeast Idaho?
It is quite a big community. I'm double majoring in Spanish for the health professions, and so it's been a great way to utilize my Spanish, as well as I have already learned that there's a ton of people that speak Spanish in Southeast Idaho.
So, Risa, why did you and your students choose the Early Learning Center as an important audience for your vaccine talk?
What I know about the Early Learning Center is they're working, I believe, with families in our community, like in early childhood education. Mm-hmm. And so this presentation will be targeting the families in the community that they are working with. We're also reaching out to a school in Utah. And so this isn't just hitting Idaho, but it's extending well beyond, and we're getting into Utah as well.
So Nick, Chance, Jacqueline, what are some of the strategies that you've been using to communicate the science about the vaccine?
Not only am I taking personal experience, a lot of questions I've heard in the community about the vaccine, but we have looked up common questions. And so we're kind of preemptively trying to answer some of those. So later when we do hit the Q&A sessions, a lot of that will have been covered. And so we can get more into personal differences.
We've also used a lot of analogies in our presentation. We compare antibodies to an army. And so we try to use analogies to make people understand it a little bit better. And we try to go into as much detail as we can and simplify it to a way that people who don't study microbiology could understand, because ultimately we do just want to give them the most knowledge and maybe they could teach someone else.
So Jacqueline, you feel like you are able to simplify it but still stay true to the science?
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, why do you think that an analogy is actually a powerful tool in improving your communication skills? I mean, you've said that you've used one, but why are you choosing to use one?
I think just because people are going to like tell their friends about that analogy, and it's going to be the way that they teach that information. They're going to go tell their mom and dad that antibodies are like an army. And when we build those antibodies up, we now have this draft force that when we get sick, we can fight it in a timely manner before it can get us sick.
Antibody might not be a term that everybody relates to, right? But everybody understands what an army is, right? And so you have something that they can really start to latch onto is like, oh, okay, an antibody, I may not know chemically what that is, but I can visualize it as like building my army so that I can fight off this infection if I get it.
Yeah, exactly. I think the main point that we use analogies for is like more to create a picture in someone's head so they can like actually visualize what we're talking about, not just like hear what we're saying, but they actually can put together like this little, I don't know, word picture in their head. So like when we say something happens, they can visualize it happening. Like I like to use the, when I brought up the lipids earlier, that encase the mRNA, I always reference it as like a UPS or like a mail truck delivering a package to like your doorstep. And the doorstep in this case is the cell. And so it brings that information to the cell for it to be made. It's just easier to picture it that way.
So how has this experience been as students? Obviously, do a lot of learning in the classroom, but now you're having to take that learning out of the classroom and apply it to a real world situation. So has it been useful, or is Reese's class just a waste of time?
Honestly, I think it's been super useful, especially with us being in the science community, being able to present research or like the things that you find, being able to properly communicate it to other people is a big part of what we will probably end up doing. we can't communicate what we've learned and like what we're going to do, then that's going to be a big obstacle that you have to overcome later. Being able to do that now is really helpful.
It's been really nice to be able to apply not only microbiology, but our general communicating skills, mm-hmm. as well as I can apply my other major Spanish, because I did translate and I'm going to give a presentation in Spanish, and I'd be able to kind of connect everything and then connect with the community.
It's also really rewarding to like see the feedback after we give presentations. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just been really fun to teach people what we know, and to see them benefit from that is just really rewarding.
So has your perception of your role, right? You guys are scientists. You're getting your degrees in microbiology. Has your perception as your role as a scientist changed by getting involved in a project like this and working directly with people that the vast majority are not scientists?
Mm-hmm. Now you realize that like you don't actually have to do all this lab or research work directly to actually have an impact when it comes to the community. Being able to just share information and factual information at that is a really key thing. And being able to do that has just honestly been kind of mind-blowing to be able to see that difference.
I think my perception has changed in the way that I understand the science behind the vaccine because I've learned about it for 4 years. And so now I think I'm more empathetic to people that don't, or that people that could be swayed mm-hmm. by false information, false news articles. I think I'm more empathetic to that because that's just all they know. And so I feel like it's really important in my role to be able to teach correct information and give them the resources that they need to make the best decision for themselves.
Wow. So are you guys confident that the public is going to get the vaccine and that we will eventually achieve what Nick talked about in terms of herd immunity, having enough people vaccinated that it essentially stops the virus?
I think that's a difficult question, as the whole concept has been highly politicized. And so it's more, from our experiences as well presenting, it's more than just the science behind the vaccine. It's also the politics behind the vaccine. And so in an ideal world, I think we have, from even our survey results, we have helped a lot of people understand that the vaccine is available and they are going to get it. But it's a difficult answer, and I could see it going either way.
So Chance, do you think that the main goal of your presentation was to try and persuade people to get the vaccine, or were you purely just presenting the information and letting them make up their own minds?
I feel like our main goal isn't to make sure that people get it. Like, our goal is just to basically give out that information, make sure they're properly informed to make the correct decision for themselves.
Okay, well, Chance, Jacqueline, Nick, you've done really well answering all our questions. But Risa, it's definitely trivia time, so maybe you should explain to your students how this is going to work.
For trivia time, we usually ask questions to our guests sort of about their topic that they study or that they're working on. So your topic today is viruses. And I want to let you know that trivia time will determine 100% of your grade in class. All right?
So obviously, because this is going to make up 100% of your grade, I wanted to make it really easy for you guys. I want you all to get a really good grade. I want you to get an A.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so screwed.
So listen carefully. If we assume that each of the 62,305 known vertebrate species harbors 58 different types of viruses, we can estimate that there are about 3.6 million different types of virus. However, if we consider there are 1.7 million other known species of invertebrates, plants, lichens, mushrooms, and brown algae, roughly how many viruses exist on Earth?
Do I get a paper and pen?
I mean, we could technically calculate it.
I mean, that's a ridiculous question. The answer is that apparently, according to this virology blog that I was reading, there's about 101 million different types of viruses.
I was like, that was going to be my guess.
You really want an A, clearly.
Yeah, I don't know if we can take that was what I was going to say. It feels a bit
like you didn't even give us a chance. You were just like, I'm going to give you the answer.
Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to get that.
How would he know?
All right, that was a ridiculous question.
That was a ridiculous question, and you're right. There are about 101 million different viruses, you know, among vertebrates and invertebrates, but that doesn't even include the bacteriophages, mm-hmm. right? And so, I mean, we're looking at, like, astronomical numbers of viruses on Earth. Okay, so clearly Scott took it easy on you guys. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to the hard stuff. And so here's your next question. This is true or false. You guys can work together. Most microbes are deadly to humans.
False.
Yes, you guys are absolutely right. Most microbes are not deadly to humans.
Yeah, go ahead. Explain the answer.
So microbes are essentially everywhere on your skin, on this table in front of us, like on these mics. They're literally everywhere. So if most of them were deadly to humans, we would long be dead. And we know that they're actually super helpful in our daily lives when it comes to like keeping us clean, keeping our digestive tract working, keeping basically everything around us in a livable atmosphere.
Wow, you're really going for that grade.
Clearly.
The rest of you guys got to step up.
Hey, I got a GPA to mean.
Okay, so on my script, I've said, okay, this is your last chance for redemption, but I feel like redemption has already sort of been made at this stage. But
all right. Well, by chance.
Yeah, true. You guys.
My back definitely hurts.
I think chance is the only one that wants to change his current grade.
Right. They're already happy. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay, so the question is, are viruses alive? So, Nick, it looks like you want to take this one. What do you think? Are viruses alive?
I personally would say no.
Oh.
Okay, why?
Because the definition of, I guess, alive that I've been taught in microbiology from numerous professors is it kind of has to be able to live on its own. And bacteria can do that, but viruses need to have other cells. And so.
Right. So you're saying that viruses cannot reproduce or make more of themselves.
By themselves.
They need a host.
They need a host cell. Yeah. They need another cell to infect.
Yeah, these guys are doing pretty well. So,
gosh.
I mean, the real answer is there is perhaps no answer because this is still up for debate. Mm-hmm. It depends on where you draw the border between non-life and life. So, I mean, you guys have really touched on some of the key arguments there, but it's sort of on a continuum.
And Nick, I mean, with the way that I teach this in class, I would say, I mean, you were not in my general microbiology class, but it's kind of like you learned it from me, basically.
You basically learned it from
basically,
everything you know is
Yeah, basically you learned it from me. So anyway, Scott, we've reached that time where we have to assign some lines to Jacqueline, Chance, and Nick based on how well they communicated their work today. So our question for you guys before we assign you your lines is, do you guys remember your line?
It's like, I promise I will not be a pain in the arm in Risa's class.
Yeah. Yeah, you're pretty much right. I will not be a pain in the arm to Risa in class for the rest of the semester. So Scott, what's the verdict today?
Well, I think these guys actually did really well, but I want to give you the same number of lines as the number of people that have received at least the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccination in the US so far, which is about 70 million.
Oh my goodness, Scott. I object to that. I cannot possibly allow my students to get pounded by you. And so I assign you guys zero lines because you have never been a pain in my arm. Aww. Really only a pleasure to work with. And we really cannot forget the awesome science communication you're doing by distilling the science behind the vaccine to our community. I thank you guys for that. And like I said, I am so proud of you and what you've accomplished this semester. So we are so happy you could join us on the show today, our first set of undergraduate students. Yep. And so we're really stoked about that.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys.
For having us.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on the Science Line today. If you are interested in having these students give a presentation or if you are interested in being on the show, please contact us at thescienceline@isu.edu.